Hey guys, welcome to episode 215 of the podcast with my wonderful guest, Kate Leth. She is terrific. We had a wonderful conversation. I think you guys are going to like it. And therefore, I have to very immediately thank the Twitter handle Essie Andres. I'm sorry if I said that wrong, my friend Essie, but you connected Kate and me. You suggested it on Twitter, and that's the power of Twitter, everybody. We went ahead and just jumped right in and did it. So I'm so delighted. I want to also thank Nicole. Thank you so much for helping me work on my website. I don't know if you'll hear this, but if you do, please know how much I appreciate you. I want to thank Liz for your email, Joseph, of course, for your email. You know, I got some really interesting, thoughtful emails based off the Annie Leonard episode. And like many of you, I've sort of gone back and forth with extreme environmentalism. I certainly don't believe that people should be harmed in any way during acts of environmental protection. I think that Greenpeace has a sort of a checkered history and certainly a reputation that may or may not be accurate. But I'm really interested in the story of stuff. And I think Annie's terrific. So I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. I know a couple of you wanted to talk about the sort of trigger idea too, because I was sort of coming at it from a like mental health trigger perspective, and I think Annie was coming at it from a sort of issues that make you angry perspective. So I tried to kind of cross over into her world, but hopefully that conversation made sense. For little qualifiers in this particular intro. So please enjoy this episode with Kate. I want to remind everyone that, and maybe I haven't even said it on the podcast before, so I want to remind you for the very first time that my new IFC show that I star in with John C. McGinley, created by Dana Gould and co-starring Nate Mooney and Deborah Baker Jr., is called Stand Against Evil, and it will have an early premiere on Halloween, just because, hey, it's Halloween, and it's a show about demons, and then will start airing regularly on IFC. Check your local listings for details. I'm sure it's very, very much DVRable, and I love this show, guys. I'm so happy with the way it turned out, and Dean is so wonderful, and the cast is great, and the crew is awesome, and I hope you'll check it out and show your support on Twitter and so forth. I know we have some time before it airs, but I'm going to try to be more consistent about talking about it in my intros and stuff. Okay, so enjoy this episode. I know you will. Kate is wonderful, and I'll talk to you guys soon.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
It's already happened. I'm recording now. I already wish you would have talked about the time difference and the fact that it's hard to set up like remote recordings with people.
Yes.
Because you name dropped Nova Scotia.
Yes. Which is where I'm from.
Which immediately launches us right into the like West Coast / Arizona American in me, who was obsessed with Anne of Green Gables.
Oh my God.
Which everyone listens to this podcast knows that the words, you know, Avonlea, Nova mm-hmm. Scotia, Prince Edward Island, those are words that become very familiar.
My homeland.
Very young age mm-hmm. with like zero understanding of what that means other than when they then made an Anne of Green Gables series, mm-hmm. right? Like a, you know, mini series or whatever. With Megan Follows. And then it was like, oh, it's heaven. Like, this is the thing that I was reading about that sounded like it was heaven is, in fact, heaven.
Well, yeah, because they filmed it there.
They filmed it there.
And it, I mean, it looks like that. Nova Scotia is, I mean, absurdly green.
It's, and when you have a character like Anne who is making the most of wherever she is anyway, mm-hmm. then you also have like, oh, and then you just pile her sort of magical perception of her surroundings on top of that. And then you have people who are trying to capture her experience of it. And so everything is the, you know, blossoming trees and beautiful yeah. forests and trickling creek. It's just like that's, and I'm from a desert, so that really seemed to me.
That's where I grew up, and I saw a local like play production of Anne of Green Gables in PEI once when I was younger. Because I mean, I read some of it when I was really young, and I forget things very quickly after I read them because I absorb too much.
I understand. I do too.
And, but it was like that was the obsession for me as a kid because I'm blonde and blue eyed. I'm Nordic in origin. All I wanted was to have like green eyes and like curly red hair,
right?
And be just like, which I feel like you can understand.
I can. I 100% can. Mm-hmm. I don't even have that I know of. There's not. I mean, it's certainly my family's genealogy that I know of hasn't been traced back even far enough beyond like a couple of hundred years ago, which is still impressive, mm-hmm. I guess. But people always assume I'm Scandinavian. I don't think I have any.
Yeah, I'm Danish.
So at least you have what you look like you have instead of me having to constantly go, no, I think pretty much just, you know, you got your Scottish, you got your French. It's, yeah.
My dad's whole family is Danish. And then my mom's family is Canadian, but her grandfather was also Danish, which is weird because my parents did not know that when they met. But like, yeah, Denmark.
Have you been to Denmark?
I have twice. I went when I was really young, and then I went again when I was 18 for like 3 weeks.
Yeah. Oh,
by
yeah.
myself, which was terrifying.
Did you go, were there relatives there? Or?
Yeah, I have some cousins, but I spent a lot of the time in like hostels, just kind of on my own. I didn't know what I was doing, and I got there and I was like terrified.
And so was the impetus for that, I want to connect with where I know I'm from?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I had only been there when I was really young, and I didn't remember it very much because I think I was like 11 or 12 the first time I go. And I say that being really young, but again, like I forget things very quickly. So I wanted to do it on my own, and I wanted to see some of my relatives that had grown up, you know, since I'd seen them, they were very young. And so I did a little bit of that, but it was mostly just to actually be able to experience it on my own and not like being led by parents to kind of do your own thing. And it was fun. I guess it's like that backpacking trip that people do after high school, before college or whatever. But
and you said you were 18?
Yeah, I was 18. Yeah. So just wandering around.
Are you an only child?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Me too.
Yeah.
All right. So
I have a half brother, but he's like 12 years older than me, and we're not super close.
Yeah. It's not the experience of growing up with a sibling.
Yeah.
Per
no,
se.
I was on my own.
Yeah. Were you that kind of kid from early on where you sort of, cause 18 is still for many people, some not as much, but I think for many people, 18 is still kind of like, some kids stay at home to go to college. Some kids go and have the kind of I'm at a college experience, but they need the the sort of security of being in a dorm or they're in an apartment with their friends versus someone who at 18 is like, I'm going to go to Denmark for 3 weeks by myself.
Yeah.
Like is that sort of representative
kind
of you?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the kind of kid I moved out on my own when I was 17, with like a stranger in a really, really shoddy apartment building that I think later got condemned for just like incurable bed bugs. They kept getting rid of them and they would just move apartment to apartment. And then eventually they were like, this is a lost cause.
An experience with bed bugs.
I've had them
twice.
Dreadful. And it is dreadful. You have to.
How small are they?
Very tiny. They're about the size of like a grain of rice.
Okay.
And but they are like the scariest thing in the world to me. Because you have to get rid of like everything you own. And I used to have this really beautiful wooden bed frame that was like, that was my big present from my parents when I moved out, was they bought me a bed, like a nice bed and a big mattress, and that was really cool.
Kind of all the things for them to buy. You.
I know, but
to be a thing like, that welcomed bed bugs.
I know, and then but the bed frame was wooden, and they can live in there for up to 3 years without you like seeing them. So after I got them, like we had them, we fumigated. I got rid of all my stuff. The one advantage when you live in Canada and you get bed bugs in the winter is that the only things that will kill them are extreme temperatures. So you can either freeze things or, you know, cook things.
Uh-huh.
So people will like put their clothes in the oven or whatever. But
sure.
Luckily for me, both times it happened were in winter. So I just left it in bags on the porch overnight.
Yeah.
Canada is so cold.
Ay-yay-yay.
But after the second time, we realized they were in the bed frame and I had to get rid of it and get this like dinky little metal thing. Because I was in college. I had no money. So.
Well, sure. Yeah. Oh, that's terrible.
Yes. Never get bed bugs. That's my advice.
Those little creatures. And I guess they can come back if you're in a building and like one area is fumigated. I'm sure they just sort of like migrate to a different place or.
Yeah, the two times that I got them was two different apartments. So that was wild.
Also, like, it's such a specific, it's not like it's like dining table bugs. Like it's, there's something so incredibly creepy about the idea that there's a reason that I'm assuming that they live in beds, which is what they do. They feed off of people. I mean, is that, that's, it's like
they
mosquitoes
they,
where
mean,
it's sort
you,
of, yeah. So they don't just bite you because incidentally you're in their world. They're like, thanks for letting us live off of you.
Yeah.
We live underneath you. Your neighbors.
And they're so hard to find. And it just like, it gets in your head because even after you get rid of them, which we did, you know, and it's expensive. And especially when you're in college and you're like living off ramen noodles and you.
Sure.
Like, you know, trying to pay for fumigation.
Yeah. Nothing can go wrong when you're that age. There just isn't anything. There's no you fat you can like, yeah, we'll
anything.
Just skim off this little savings I've been. Yeah.
Yeah, and my roommate, the second time it happened, she was allergic to them. So it was like imperative that we fumigate and get rid of them immediately because she would swell up like crazy
God.
If she got them. And so we had to do that, and it was a lot to deal with. It's like a psychological thing too, where they physically when you get bitten by bed bugs, like it messes with your head and your like body and you get nightmares. And then for months and months and months
wait, you're saying it messes with your head, like there's actually
there's
something in
when
the
they bite, like if you get bitten. Yeah, I know, it's
Kate,
disgusting.
This can't
I'm
get
sorry.
Any worse.
I'm sorry. I know anyone listening who's ever
it's like
had
the, it's like the cat
reliving.
Like the cat scratch or like the cat poop, like the things
yes.
the parasites that get into your head and make you a different person.
And then for 6 months afterwards, if I was sleeping anywhere, like it didn't matter where, and you feel an itch, you're like up.
Yeah.
Up, and you, because it's so hard to find them. Because unless you like find one, you don't know if you have them. Because as soon as you turn the light on, they're just like gone.
Oh.
So you have to like jump up and like check your mattress with a flashlight and stuff like that. And it's awful. Nova Scotia, I mean, where I'm from in Halifax, has like a bed bug problem, just like New York does.
Oh,
I mean, New York has it
really
intensely, but. It's not great.
I don't remember anything about bed bugs when people in Anne of Green Gables were in Halifax.
It was probably like after her time.
Well, I'll tell you what, though, the whole don't sleep tight, you know, don't let the bed bugs bite thing, which is like as
people
a child, you hear that and you're like, the bed bugs, oh, don't let them bite you. Yeah. And it's a horrible waking nightmare.
Yes. And it's, it can happen anywhere. A lot of people think it's just places that are dirty, you know, but it's, they can travel in suitcases and stuff like that. I'm sorry.
No. What if I was like, I mean, I don't want to say we've spent the first 10 minutes talking about bed bugs, but we've spent close to the first 10 minutes because it's terrifying.
It is really, it's one of my scariest experiences. And it took me so long to be able to sleep through the night and not like,
but to be honest with you, I wonder if there's like, even if that's a horrible, horrible thing to happen. I mean, I wonder if there's part of you that's like, well, at home, I've had this.
Yep.
Might as well spend 3 weeks in Denmark. Like, it's not going to... How bad could a bed be in Denmark? Could be I have bed bugs, but I know what those are like, you know?
It's true. I think there's a lot of experiences that once you have it, I mean, it's horrible, but then afterwards you're like, well, okay, I got through
on the other side. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I do feel like that's true. I feel like there's also just a host of things waiting that may or may not ever happen that I won't know that I can get through until I do.
Well, luckily, I feel like the LA climate is not really conducive to them because it's too hot.
Yeah.
A lot of the time. Like extreme temperature places, they don't tend to.
Well, yeah.
To lose,
I mean, Arizona, for me, it was like that was not. There are plenty of awful insects and creatures that live in Arizona.
I like to imagine just like so many people listening to this right now, just like scratching. Just
probably. Like, I kind of feel like I have some, I have some little
like,
ghost itches for
sure. You
don't
have them. It's fine. You're okay.
Okay. I'm all right. Now, so when you went to Denmark, my experience of being there, and these guys know, is that everyone spoke better English than me for the most part. And so there was something very... I mean, it's hard because you can certainly, it still can be very immersive where you don't have to have the experience of just being like, well, listen, everyone speaks my language, so I don't have to worry about it. But it's definitely different being in countries like that where people are just so comfortable speaking English rather than a place where you really are immersed and kind of have to fumble your way through.
Well, it was really interesting because I spent the first 2 weeks in Aarhus, which is not a primarily English-speaking area of Denmark.
Right, yeah.
It's a little more, not not remote, but that's it's true. Not a tourist area so much.
Yeah.
So I was staying in a hostel, and then, you know, part of it staying with a relative, people who spoke sort of broken English. And so there wasn't a lot of talking. And I got to a point at one point where I talked to someone in a store and realized I hadn't spoken out loud in like 3 days.
Oh, sure. Sure. And I'm sure people also assumed that you were, you know, Danish.
Yeah. Well, I look the part.
Yeah. So, 'cause people thought that about me too. And mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I bet. And I just did a lot of, 'cause I didn't know what to do. And I'm a very like anxious and nervous person. So I spent a lot of my days just, you can rent those city bikes in yeah. Aarhus, and I would get them and just like bike around.
Yeah.
And look at things, because I had no idea what to do. I didn't have very much money. And
but still, as a nervous and anxious person, you still made the decision to do that. You know, I just think that's interesting, because that's the kind of, you could also start that, you know, descriptive about yourself and say, and that's why I don't go anywhere. But, you know, you still took those adventures.
Oh, yeah, and I travel constantly now, yeah. You know. And it was weird because, yeah, the 2 weeks that I spent there, and then my last week of my trip I spent in Copenhagen. And it was so strange to come back to everyone speaking English, or yeah. most people speaking English. And, you know, Copenhagen's such a big tourist center, and everywhere you go, people just assume that you are an English speaking person.
Right.
And it was almost like culture shock after 2 weeks of just not talking to anyone or using my extremely broken, like minimal Danish knowledge to get by. And it was neat. It was a cool experience. I love Copenhagen, and I spent a lot of time just walking around.
I loved Aarhus too. I really liked the kind of college vibe of a lot of it. And and like the museum there was beautiful and very cool. It's definitely interesting to be in a place where there is like a natural homogeny, where I feel like I spent so much of my life trying to avoid communities where everyone looked the same.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting being, you know, whenever you're traveling if you're in a small country, and, you know, there just hasn't been a lot of, there haven't been a lot of, I mean, certainly there's obviously like all of those countries have constant conversations the same way we do about immigration. And but if you don't have a ton of emigration or immigration in such a small place, where there just isn't going to be that much, there's going to be a lot of like, oh yeah, okay, everyone kind of stayed put, I guess, because most people sort of look the same. Oh wait, this is just a thing that happens, because it's so un-American in that way, where, well, you know.
I mean, I'm Canadian, and so I grew up, again, in this like really small town, and Nova Scotia and Halifax are like overwhelmingly white places.
That was my next question. Arizona
from.
Border, totally different.
Totally
but, yeah,
different experience,
yeah.
You know? And so I grew up in a very like, it's like this tiny little sort of petri dish. I guess everyone's very similar. And then, I mean, in the sort of more remote places of Denmark, it's very much the same.
Sure.
You know, it's everybody looked like me.
Yeah. Yeah.
until you get to Copenhagen, right? And it's a funny thing too that I'm sort of experiencing now, because I lived in Nova Scotia pretty much my entire life. I lived in Ontario until I was about 11, and then we moved to Nova Scotia. And so, I mean, all of my memories and all my growing up were there. I went to college there. I dropped out of college there. And then I went back to college and dropped out again there. I can never make up my mind about anything.
Understood.
And then, just this year I moved to LA, and it is... I mean, you can't imagine two places that are more different.
Absolutely.
So adjusting to that has been, you know, way more of a culture shock. And it's neat. I feel like it's long overdue, because everyone, you know, people go away to college. And in Canada, you go to Montreal, or you go to Toronto, or you go to Vancouver, or, you know, places that are a lot bigger and have a lot more diversity, and they have a lot more, just more of everything. And then I moved from like the littlest nothing place, a really, really sweet place, to... you know, this huge, crazy city that is LA, and it's been really interesting.
How big is Halifax in terms of just like kind of population? Like,
it's in between a town and a city.
Mm-hmm.
I think Nova Scotia, the whole population is like 1 million people or something. I'm bad with numbers. I'm an art person.
No, I understand. But, yeah, those. It doesn't really do anything for me unless I have a contact. Like, I can sort of take a context and go, okay, well, if Nova Scotia, because I know Nova Scotia is a large body of land to only have 1 million people in comparison with something like New York State.
It's like Halifax to me is like smaller than Burbank. So.
Yeah. Well, that's a good way of thinking of it.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, the downtown in Burbank, like the San Fernando Road area. Okay. That's like downtown Halifax.
Yeah.
But like just that one street.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the rest of it's residential. And there's like five universities. So it's, I mean, it's a big university town. The population doubles every fall.
Oh, wow.
And it's the also the only time like not white people come to town.
Sure, sure.
Because of where we are. And it's great. But yeah, it's very small. You know everybody. Like if you go, if you're in any way a social person and you go downtown of an evening,
right.
You will probably run into somebody you know.
Yeah.
So
did you feel and were you a misfit, or is it a town that embraces misfits, or did you feel like you were being exposed culturally to the same kind of thing as other people? So there was a certain point at which something broke wide open for you, if that makes sense.
Well, just like in terms of me like always being like weird. Yes,
right. My favorite.
Yes,
that's why you wanted red hair and green eyes, because yes. As I discovered in maybe it was with Colleen Smith, who is a wonderful Henson puppeteer and also has red hair and had red hair as a native born to Hawaii. I was like, wait a minute, why am I just now realizing that like every adorable misfit odd child has red hair in literature? No wonder we all wanted it. We all wanted to be like Annie or Meg Murray from A Wrinkle in Time, mm-hmm. or like all of these, you know, kids that have
I wanted
this
to
sort
be
of...
the goth character in like every story. So when I was in high school, to like give you a picture, I had black hair, straight Betty Page bangs, and I wore, it was like, so in junior high, I was really into Avril Lavigne because I'm from Canada, and I was like, it was like acceptable punk. Uh-huh. It's, you know, like sterilized punk that's safe for someone who's in grade 7.
Like Alanis Morissette, sort of like, yes. This is a very educated, very angry, but very nice Canadian person. Yes. Like, they're still
and
she's the sort of,
and you know, I loved her stuff too. So. Yeah. I went from like my junior high look, which was very much like ties over t-shirts and like Dickies pants with like super, see, cause this was all, I mean, I'm like 20, just 28 next week. So that was my whole experience, was like going to high school was sort of the mid 2000s, and like emo and pop punk were like our whole world,
mm-hmm.
but, and musicals for me, which I like kept hidden, mm-hmm. because I was, you know, really, really into goth stuff and like listened to Evanescence every day, but I was also super into Wicked and I just didn't want anyone to know that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was.
Is that because there was, would you say that there was a Wicked loving type at your high school that,
no,
do you know what
think
I mean?
There was like, that was the era where being a poser was like the greatest crime you could possibly commit.
I think that might be. Yeah. Cause that was true for me too. And I'm older than you, but I definitely think, yeah, there's something about that age where you have to like what you like and be consistent,
mm-hmm.
not for everyone, but I think definitely when we were both teenagers, I think there was definitely, because it must be that really important kind of like for a lot of kids, that's when you're really sort of choosing who you are, and those mm-hmm. things become so important, because it is the sort of like, I got to figure out what I like. And then it's very important to me to project that outwards, especially I think for artistic kids, because maybe if you're, you know, maybe I have friends who weren't as into the kind of arts back then, who were like, oh no, I mean, I just like listened to whatever was on and I, you know, well, on the radio, and I didn't really, I just dressed how I saw other people dressing, but I didn't think about it. And then I have, you know, I've had other guests who were like, oh no, it was so important to me to kind of have this identity that I was wearing and expressing all the time.
Yeah. I've always been a person who, like, I don't think I've ever looked normal. There's maybe a brief period. Cause I mean, okay. When I was, I'd say probably 11 or 12, I cut all of my hair off and dyed it like neon red. I got my first tattoo when I was 14. Like,
oh, wow. Okay. That's early for sure.
Very early. I didn't get my second one until I was 17. But
did you get those in Halifax?
Yeah.
Or were you somewhere else?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. In a really, really shady store that has since closed down.
Yeah. Did you go in as a 14 year old? I was going to say, it's not like you brought your mom with you, or did you?
I tell people all the time when I talk about it, is that I think my mom thought it was going to be like that thing where you catch your kids smoking. So you make them like smoke a whole pack of cigarettes.
Oh, no.
And I was like, I really want a tattoo. And my mom was like, fine, I'll take you to the store, thinking I was going to like chicken out or get scared.
Yes.
And I didn't. And I got it. And then.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. That's an amazing backfire. Have you ever talked to her about that?
Not really. But I mean, my mom has a bunch of tattoos now too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. She had a few. And then my parents got divorced a couple years ago. And then after that, she was like, I'm going to get tatted up. And she's actually coming into town on Friday, and I haven't seen her since January, which is really exciting. And, but she cut a bunch of her hair off and has like a purple mohawk now.
Holy shit.
My mom is extremely cool.
Oh my God. What were your parents like when you were in high school? What were they?
Well, I mean, my mom is so different now. I think it was like in a weird place when we were in high school. My parents were kind of hippies and very like chill with everything.
Did they have you young, older?
Older. I think my mom was like 31 when I was born.
Yeah,
like
so that's not really, that's like, neither this nor that. Yeah,
I definitely usually had older parents than the rest of my friends, but not like significantly. And yeah. You know, that's like a standard age now.
Yeah, it really, I was going to say now it's
I know
like,
who has
that's
kids
young.
In their 20s, I'm just like, oh, you must be very rich.
That's right. Exactly.
Especially Americans, because at least in Canada we can have babies for free.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they were hippies. They were pretty chill. They like both my parents were atheists and very just like into funny stuff. So everything that I sort of went through, like I came out to my parents as being bisexual when I was like 11. Like before I had any concept of like what sex was.
Oh yeah. You know? Yeah.
I just was like, I'm pretty sure that I'm also into girls. And I remember telling my parents and they were like, yeah, cool. Like, sure.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Nice.
Which is so strange. Like I definitely had an atypical experience in that way where they were like pretty chill about everything. Yeah. And then I don't know. I mean, I just talked to my mom now, but, she's awesome.
What were your friends like when you were in high school? Did you have friends who were sort of similar or, God. I mean, I know that you, yeah.
It was so, I mean, I would change, but, a lot of my friends in high school, in the beginning of high school, I had all my goth friends.
And were they friends who, because it was a small town, were these kids that you had grown up with and you guys all kind of discovered this stuff at the same time?
Really,
or new
no.
friends?
Because I went to a different school every year until grade 7.
Okay.
So we were constantly moving.
Oh.
So the longest I had known anyone when I started high school was like 2 or 3 years.
Oh yeah, because you moved from Ontario when you were 11 anyway. So
yeah,
there really wasn't
so I
much
just,
room.
And even
yeah,
when
yeah,
we
yeah,
were
yeah.
in Ontario, I was constantly changing schools.
Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't really have a lot of history with people. So
which is kind of great. I mean, yeah. It's sort of weird and great to be able to sort of, you know, go, well, who do I want to be?
So I fell in with the goth kids, got super into like the Distillers and Brody Dalle and wore my hair spiked like all the time. And then I grew it out to be like long and black. And then I got really into improv and was like a competitive improv kid.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that about you. That's awesome.
That was my last 2 years of high school. And then I got like a little more normal. I tried to bleach my black hair, which was a horrifying experience. Uh-huh. I don't recommend it.
To go from black almost to white. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause my hair like 2 years ago was black.
Yeah.
And it's a painful experience. Uh-huh. I think I floated between a lot of different groups of friends. My last sort of year of high school was the closest I ever came to being like popular, just because the guy I dated was like popular and well liked and very like nice and normal, whereas everyone else I had sort of been associated with was like really weird on the fringes. And you know, he had a trampoline and he was cool. So
wow, a trampoline.
It was nice. That's heavy currency.
That's hot stuff.
When you're a teenager.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember if I feel like I did some trampolining, but I don't think I did any by the time high school rolled around. I think that was a point where I was like, I probably already was like, oh, I'll break my neck. Those days are over. I'm too big. I'll break it.
No, man, I loved it. I love that kind of stuff.
That's great.
It was cute. I mean, the place I grew up with and the place I went to high school in that area was like very idyllic.
Yeah.
So even though we were the weirdos, we were like the 7 weirdos in the whole town.
Right, right. would you characterize yourself too as sort of like still a really nice person? Like I was definitely very goth, but I was also like a total goofball. And, you know, I would wear black lipstick and that didn't mean that I wasn't going to also just be like completely giggly with like fellow nerds in the classroom that look nothing like me or whatever.
Yeah, that's the one thing is when, you know, you look up to all those sort of goth characters, they're always like very sullen and very self-serious. And I have never been like that. I mean, I've been sad, you know, I always have sort of struggled with that. But I definitely have always been like a goofy, weird, fun. I love comedy. I love, you know, funny stuff. And I just liked, I felt like that look was me at the time.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly how I felt, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think I also had, to your point, I think it's nice when there's a thing that, I mean, I definitely feel like there was something about that look that felt very empowering to me. Mm-hmm. And and still does. You know, there's something about it that feels like that just feels like it doesn't feel utterly fuck you, but it definitely feels like, yeah, I know what I'm doing. Like, yes. There's something about it that feels like, which is funny because, you know, here it is, this kind of established look. It's not like my version of that is like, well, I wanted to dye my hair silver and only wear jumpsuits or whatever, like whatever thing would be kind of not anything,
yeah,
per se.
No, I
versus
had like the
a look where you're like,
look,
well, I need to be very unique and individual. Therefore, I'm going to embrace this look that very clearly identifies me with X, Y, and
Z. Yeah, it was like, you know, knee-high striped socks and mismatched Chuck Taylors.
Great.
Obviously.
Great.
You could not wear the same color on both feet. Or Doc Martens.
Yeah.
That I had like giant stickers of cat eyes on. Fishnet sleeves.
Oh, sure.
Every day.
Fishnet sleeves. Gotta get those fishnet sleeves
which
on.
I,
you
like,
don't know when you're going to have to catch fish in an emergency.
And I mean, try and imagine.
You can sling them up with your hands.
Although I guess it's like an era difference, but like, we didn't have Hot Topic. Like, this is Halifax.
Yeah. Were you Goodwill shopping?
Yeah, there was a lot of, like, thrifting. A lot of buying stuff at Sears and then cutting it up or, you know, cutting the sleeves off T-shirts or whatever. It was like, make the best of what you can.
Sure.
You know, we didn't have, like, chains that you could wear. So you'd buy them from, like, the Petco. Store.
Yeah, 100%.
Exactly.
Same.
You know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, make, like, dog collars and, like, necklaces and stuff out of things you buy at pet stores. Because, like, there was nothing, you know.
Yeah.
You couldn't. I remember I got to a point in high school where, like, the Sears near us started selling colored tights. And it just changed my world. Because this is an era before Amazon, and even Amazon, even Amazon in Canada couldn't order anything other than books until a couple years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's also changed my life since moving here. Amazon is amazing.
Oh, I know. I mean, it really.
It's so good.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was, and a lot of like buying tights and cutting holes in them intentionally, like ripping them intentionally.
Yeah.
So you look really tough.
Yeah.
Because
you got into a couple of serious scraps while you were wearing your purple tights.
Exactly. As if I wasn't just at home playing World of Warcraft every day.
Yeah. But, well, I guess that's a good next question is kind of what hobbies were. Cause I know that you said you liked comedy and your parents kind of were also like funny and relaxed in certain ways. I guess that's a good question. I know you secretly like musicals.
Yes.
I know now that you played World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
Were you, but when did you start drawing and stuff? Was that always a thing too?
Like, yeah, so it's sort of niche to describe because people don't always know what I'm talking about, but, are you familiar with Emily the Strange, like the character?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So that stuff came out when I was in early high school, probably 10th grade, and I was obsessed. So it's this like caricature of this like sad teen girl who has like black hair and straight bangs, which is why I had black hair and straight bangs.
Great.
Because I just wanted to be this character. And I started a fan art website where I would just like draw her using Sharpies and printer paper.
Very much still a thing. So many people's Tumblrs are dedicated
to
this is the kind of art that I do. Yeah.
Yes. So I did that, but this was kind of an era before that. You know, we were still sort of in web rings at this point in time.
Yeah.
And I got contacted by the people who actually made Emily the Strange and the creators of that. And they were like, oh man, you draw all this cool fan art and you look exactly like this character. Like, do you want to sort of be like a face on our website? And we will just send you stuff and, you know, send us pictures of you wearing it or whatever. And
that's huge.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
And so I would get this box every month of like Emily the Strange t-shirts and plush dolls and keychains and stuff like that. And so it was pretty much all I wore for about a year. And then, yeah, they would use my fan art on their website. I got to like beta test stuff before it came out. And it was really funny because I actually saw the two guys at San Diego Comic Con this year and told them this whole story. And they like completely did not remember.
Oh, really? I was going to say, I think I was expecting some sort of end game to this story where you're like,
oh, cool.
And then they started crying with joy when I finally met them.
No clue who I was, which is fine.
That's funny. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It was like, you know, 12, 13 years ago. But that was my whole scene for a while. And that was like my first sort of dabble into putting anything of my own online.
Sure.
And I didn't really do that again until after I dropped out of college the second time and started doing comic stuff, which was only like 5-6 years ago. So.
Yeah. What were you studying when you were in school both times?
Photography.
Oh, okay. And, cool.
Yeah. Funny. I went to school for makeup too, mm-hmm. and got a diploma doing that and worked for Mac for a while.
Yeah.
And so I've done a little bit of everything, but I never writing, like never mm-hmm. intended to end up as a writer. Mm-hmm. It just kind of happened, mm-hmm. which is neat.
Yeah.
And very indicative of like how my life works. I just sort of jump into new things every couple of years.
I very much understand that. I very much understand that. Especially if you do, or you're a person who has multiple interests and you don't sort of have, you don't feel like you were born with, which some people do feel like they have this sort of, you know, calling on some level. And I mean, the stuff that I'm doing now, I love. I mean, it's now it feels like, oh, I would really miss this. But mm-hmm. most of the stuff that I did, including acting in school and stuff, was not like, God, if I didn't have this, I don't know what. You know, it was just, I was always sort of ready for something else to catch, to be passionate about, because I would see other people being so passionate about stuff.
Like, this is my thing.
And I would go, God, this is my one thing. Why have I just not found that yet? Or am I just going to kind of really like a bunch of different stuff
and
possibly never be amazing at any of it, but maybe be kind of good at a lot of it?
I've been kind of good at a lot of things my whole life. And that's just, you know, I was like, I was also, okay, so I'm trying to get into like, what's like the interesting stuff about my childhood? I was a Ritalin kid. So in school, I was like, not creative for that entire period of time because it just like shuts down that part of your brain.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't anymore. I feel like they fixed it.
Yeah. But, for you, certainly.
The stuff I was taking was like no creativity, but I was like months ahead in my school work, you know.
Great question mark.
Yeah. It was interesting. And like I eventually, my parents and I, we just decided to take me off of it because I was like a zombie that was great at math.
Yeah.
And that's just not really who I am.
Yeah.
I tried it again in high school for a little while, actually, when I was still on the improv team, because I was just having a really hard time, like, focusing.
Well, I was going to, that was my very neck, the thing that my brain immediately jumped to was like, oh, I wonder how this plays into or doesn't with improv.
Yeah, so I tried it for, like, 6 months on a different version, the stuff Concerta, which was, like, it's, like, low-dose time-release Ritalin, and we did that for a while, because I was just... I had like a terrible time focusing. I'm a very easily distracted person now. I make a lot of lists.
I know, I do too. I have
so many lists.
I could take you on a tour of my house of unfinished projects. And they're not like...
Oh, absolutely.
People think that that means like, this is the birdhouse I started building, which sometimes could be true.
Yeah.
But it is also like, oh, this is like, if I take you into my bathroom right now... There's a bunch of makeup sitting on there because this morning I was like, I need to go through all of this and start getting rid of some.
Yep.
And then I just wandered off.
Yep.
And started doing something completely different.
Absolutely. That's all me.
Yeah.
I start a lot of projects and seeing them through is rough. I have a very, very like rigid Google Calendar and there are alerts for everything.
Good for you.
Because I will forget.
That's probably why it worked out so well that both you and I, and shout out to our listener, and I'll make sure in my intro to actually remember who this person was, because someone who's a fan of both of us said, you should have Kate on your podcast. And I was like, absolutely, 100%. And then you and I connected and that was like 2 days ago and we are here podcasting right now, and
I was
sometimes
like, if we don't
that's
do this
better
now, we won't
100% because this is the first time, guys, that I can say, maybe honestly the first time, if not close to the first, where I don't have to say, we finally did it, Kate. What has it been, a year? And we finally did it. Like,
there's
like something very powerful about, well, you want to do it? You're free? Great. We're done. We did it. This is awesome. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because also, like, we were going to schedule it, but my mom's coming in on Friday and she's going to be here for like a week and a half. And I was like, well, I can't do it. You know,
and that's how time drifts. And especially if we both do cons, which we both do, then not only are you always gone, but, and I've said this on the podcast before, the concept of time warps immediately.
Oh,
it is, it's not to say, it's not even as exact as like, and this is why anything that involves like sort of not like necessarily time travel, but although certainly, you know, many of us love that kind of stuff too, and I do, but just the sort of exploration of the concept of the perception of time in and of itself is so fascinating to me, because I can't say that going out of town, like there's no like mathematical formula of going out of town equals it feels like X amount of time has passed when really X amount of time has passed. It's not that. It's like the whole concept gets thrown out the window and you're sort of hovering above. Like that's sort of how I feel when I fly sometimes.
Yes.
You sort of, you actually feel not just metaphorically that you're, you know, or not just literally that you're hovering above the earth, but metaphorically you are too. And there's a sort of suspension of like, it almost feels like nothing, like I'm in, it's, even though I'm moving, I'm in a stillness.
Oh man.
And so when I come home,
I feel this so
it's
hard.
Not that I'm like, oh, I just got back or I just was gone. I couldn't tell you. It's like, it feels like an eon has passed and no time has passed.
I actually, over the past couple of years, because I do, I mean, also a lot of conventions, you know, I was at two the last two weekends, and that is very draining. But I actually started really loving flying in airports. It's such a mixed bag, because I hate flying for having to get to the airport, especially LAX, which is a nightmare, and like TSA and all of that kind of stuff. Like, I hate all of that.
Right.
I hate those things. I hate, you know, that the to and from the airport, I hate the scheduling. I hate just that whole time suck, but I kind of love when you're in the air and just there's nothing.
Yeah.
And you can just watch a movie or you can just get
the
work
whole,
done.
The whole Wi-Fi thing is also a mixed bag, because there are sometimes when it's the most helpful thing in the world.
And sometimes and you're just sometimes like, I don't want
you're like,
that.
I can't, I don't want to have that little string connecting me to everyone who's not on this plane.
Yeah. It's also, I like planes for catching up on movies too. So many things I don't see or miss out on.
Absolutely.
And I just really like those spaces of time. Like a 4 to 5 hour flight is just this really ideal kind of detox of the world.
Yeah.
And then you get off and you rejoin society again. And it's really, I kind of hope that Wi-Fi doesn't get on every plane everywhere. Yeah. And I know that it will.
Right.
You know, in 5 years, there will just be like no such thing as not having Wi-Fi on a plane, I'm sure. But I do like it.
I feel the same way. And I think it's funny that it takes... It's funny that, you know, one way of escaping is, you know, to be the person who goes out and goes camping.
Yeah.
And that feels like a very specific disconnect on every level from technology. And then you have this other version, right, where you are relying on a piece of modern technology to disconnect you from the rest of technology. There's something really amazing about that.
I think, I mean, it's something that only comes to you, I think, after you are a heavy traveler.
Yeah.
And you, because when you don't travel a lot and you fly, there's so much to think about. You know, there's so many things you have to worry about, and it's all kind of new or infrequent. But when you fly every couple of weeks, it's just, you know, there's that whole stress. But I actually I love the period of time where you can just like have dinner and a beer in an airport bar and like read a book.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Yep.
And I really love the period of time when you're just in the air and there's just nothing.
Yeah.
There's just nothing but movies or a book or whatever.
Yeah.
Because I'm so easily distracted.
Very much so.
You're forced to focus.
Yep.
And I love that.
I totally agree. Especially, I mean, when you sort of talk about, I mean, it's funny that I feel like, As a person who has trouble focusing, something like high school is kind of the devil, because you are juggling so many subjects, and you also feel like it's out of your control, because the expectation is like you will have all this homework and you will have these varying things that you have to juggle, and that feels very overwhelming to many people, whether or not they have any sort of like, you know, focus problems.
Yeah.
But to feel like when you have that mountain of stuff and you something in you just kind of shuts down and you go, I don't know how I'm going to do any of this at all, so I just won't do any of it, which happens to a lot of kids, versus, oh, well, now it's my second time back at school, which I also did in college. And I was so aware that like I had chosen to go back to school that second time after I dropped out.
Yep.
And I was going to take the classes I wanted to take, damn it. And I was going to, and the freedom of like, you know what? I'm just going to take one class this semester. I have a job. Yep. I'm going to take this class, or I'm going to take these two classes. And then, you know, 6 months later go, I'm going to tell my job that I need to take more school, and I'm going to take four classes. I'm going to work part time. To feel like you're really driving that car, so to speak, is such a different experience than feeling like it's all just kind of getting heaped on you. And it's funny that, you know, for people like you and me to then choose a career where rather than have this quote unquote structure that you sort of intuitively, like someone else would intuit, oh, you need to go in and check in and punch your time card every day because you need that kind of order or you'll just be a frazzled mess, to then find a way to go, you know what, I'm going to actually, I'm going to embrace all of that. I'm going to be gone all the time. I'm not going to have a lot of regularity in my life. I'm going to work at home, but then maybe I'll go do this, or maybe I'll take this on. Is that would end up being the thing that you still feel comfortable with, I think is so interesting.
Yeah, I've really had to work on it because I've been working from home for 2 years now. So I for a long time, I was working in a comic book store, which is how I got into comics. And then I would do my own comic stuff on the side. So I would work from like 10 until 6, and I would come home and eat, and I would draw and do internet stuff until midnight. And I would do that every day. And that was how, you know, people do this thing all the time where especially young people will get a level of success and quickly, and you know, people who are not as tuned into social media and the way that that kind of works now will be like, oh, you were an overnight success. And it's like, well, no, every day for a year I came home and put in 6 hours on top of my day job, and only then could I start to like relax and not do it every day. It was like, my name is sort of ubiquitous, it's out there. And then people be like, oh, you didn't do any work. You were just like immediately successful. And right. I cannot help but roll my eyes at that, because it's like, no, I was just relentlessly ambitious, which is how I've always been. And so now that I've been working at home for 2 years, like I really, especially after I moved here, because when I lived back at home in Nova Scotia, my roommates had not super rigid work schedules. Like they would change a lot, or one of them would be in school. So there were people around when I was working, but my boyfriend has like a steady normal day job. And so I'm home alone for like, you know, from like 9:30 until like 6:30 or 7 some days. And you really have to force yourself to work, because sometimes I don't have that many hours of work in a day.
Yeah.
And I'll just sit around kind of staring at the wall like, what do I do now?
Yeah.
Which is how I also got into video games after I moved here.
I can imagine. Boy, that feels like that could be, if someone said, we only invented video games for people who were their own boss, who needed a way to fill time and still be sort of using, like solving puzzles. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because I work differently than a lot of people, where I can get writing done faster than a lot of people. And that's not a brag in any way, because like, okay, so I'll write a script and it'll take me, you know, 2 solid days, whereas it might take somebody else a week. But I will sit on my computer for like 7 hours and not move and just type intensely, and then I'll do that again the second day, and then for 3 days I just have to do nothing after that. Like, I have to recuperate. But you know, I mean, that's that hyper focus, right? Like, that's still part of, you're easily distracted, but once you sit down to do something, it's like a laser. Mm-hmm. And that's how I've always been. So working from home is like, It's having to actually make yourself sit down and only do 3 hours of work so that you don't have to have 2 full days of not eating or breathing or going to the bathroom. Like, you sit there for 6 hours and you're like, oh, I haven't peed or eaten.
Yeah.
Like,
again, it goes back to that concept of time thing too, right?
But that's a different experience of time. Yeah. Like, oh, I'm dying.
Yeah.
So it's having to force myself to actually do a little bit every day rather than doing that, you know, insane thing. Because if something comes up on one of those days you've set aside to write most of a script, you know, like you have to do an errand or you have to go work on something, then you're just like,
that upsets the entire very delicate balance.
I don't know if you get that thing too, but once you've set a schedule, if something messes with it, it just like that sets off a panic for me. That is,
yeah, and I've just invited that life. Like, yes. I've invited, every day is an invitation to set me off into a, like, that's exactly what happened to me the 2 nights ago. I knew I was doing At Midnight yesterday, mm-hmm. and the night before I was supposed to do At Midnight, so Monday night, one of my agents called me at like 7 o'clock at night and said, okay, this offer just came in for you to do this recurring role in this cool TV show.
Yeah.
They really want you, but you would have to work at 8:30 tomorrow. We'd mm-hmm. have to figure out a way to cancel and reschedule at midnight, and but you'd be done by 2 o'clock tomorrow in the
you
afternoon.
Feel like so a sinkhole has opened up.
I couldn't.
Underneath
it's
you.
Like, and so that is a perfect example of like quote unquote good problems to have.
Yeah.
No one's saying it was like someone said you have to have surgery tomorrow. It's not that, but just the sort of like, whoa, 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 whoa. Why is this suddenly a thing? How is this a thing? Why am I, I have to figure this out. I'm making a decision here, you know, opposed to someone just going, no, this change and reacting to something changing is stressful enough, but then being the person who has to ultimately decide, mm-hmm. which it wasn't really, I mean, the nice thing was I was able to say, I don't feel this is a decision that can be made, because it would be really shitty to do that to At Midnight. And mm-hmm. I love doing that show. Mm-hmm. So we just didn't do it. But for that 20 minutes where I was taking the process of deciding very seriously. And my agents are wonderful, and they don't ever pressure me. And so they were like, no, it's whatever you want to do. Like, if you feel really strongly about this show, we'll get into it with At Midnight. But if you don't, no big deal. And I'm like,
Just tell me what to do. Like, yeah. Oh my God. And it literally is the joke that, like, when I'm stressed out and my boyfriend asks me what I want for dinner, I'm just like, please just take this out of my hands.
Could not relate more. And I'm getting better at saying that.
And then he'll offer two things. Right. And I'm like, no.
That's still a choice.
No. Just pick it.
Do you feel like you're getting better at seeing that? Because I feel like I'm getting better at identifying it and being able to, rather than taking that on and not just saying, like, there was a time at which I would take that on. I wouldn't say I can't make that decision. Mm-hmm. I would take that into account also, and then everything else would fall apart. And I would be moody towards the person who had asked me that, rather than, I think I'm getting better at saying, you know what? That's one decision too many. Please just tell us what we're doing. You decide, and I'm going to be great with it no matter what it is, because whatever happens, it will be worse if I try to enter into this decision process.
Well, I did, the most Los Angeles thing when I moved here and started seeing a therapist, and that has helped exponentially.
Was that something that you had not done up to that point?
No, when you look at the comics I made when I was like 20 and 21, you'd be like, oh my God, why were you not talking to someone?
Though, you were expressing it. Do you know what I'm saying? Yes. Like, I think the scarier thing is, oh, I wasn't doing anything. I was in a church group when secretly I felt all of these ways and I never told anyone. Yeah. But if you were expressing it, that's a form of therapy.
It was. And, we talk about it now, but it honestly has, and I've been making comics about that too. Like, the comics about therapy, which is just so meta and cyclical. I had to give one to my therapist, which is terrifying. she liked it. So thank God.
Oh, good.
I started doing that because when I first moved here, I got cripplingly depressed. Like, I could not get out of bed for
massive change.
Weeks. Yeah.
By the way, I feel like it's a massive change for someone to move from San Diego to Los Angeles, much less Nova Scotia.
In the middle of nowhere. And I'm sure you experience this too, if you're in that same sort of personality type where you feel like you can handle just about anything, and pretty much anything comes along and you have that fake it till you make it thing. And you're just like, yeah, I can do that. So I was like, I got through the entire process of getting my visa, which is an enormous, horrific undertaking.
Absolutely awful.
It took a year and so much money.
Yeah.
Just so much money.
Ugh.
And I finally got here and I was like, I did that. I did the hard part. It's going to be fine. And then you don't realize that you've changed your climate in every possible way. And you are completely separated from your network of people. It was the first time I've lived away from my mom my entire life.
Yeah.
And all of my friends. And I was just like, this will be fine. I know people out here. And it's like, oh no, you casually know people from a work experience out here. You don't have your best friends that you can get drunk with and cry about your problems.
Right.
Because
right.
you might work together on books and you don't know. And I mean, those people have become closer friends since I've been here, but it was horrifying. And so I finally kind of broke down and started, sorry if this is over personal, but,
welcome to my podcast, Kate.
I listened to it and I was like, this is fine. I started doing that and it really has changed so much. And I've kind of quietly become an advocate for it.
Me too. 100%.
Yeah. Because I think so much of my reticence to do it, was that you feel like when you're the kind of person who feels like you can handle anything, you feel like you can,
that's a failure of some kind.
It's a failure, relying on someone else. And also I have a deep distrust of people I don't know, especially if I'm paying them. It feels like, well, how can I trust you if I'm just giving you money to care about my problems? I don't, I'm very paranoid and so that was really, really hard. But it's been the best thing I've ever done. And, so that kind of stuff and that organization. And I thought about that because, literally last week, I had one of those huge conflict issues come up. So my mom's coming into town and we were planning on going to Disneyland because they do a gay day.
Oh, nice. And, yeah.
And it's the day after my birthday. So I was like, this will be amazing. We're going to go. And my mom's super into it. She's like, I'll bring my rainbow tutu.
I love your mom.
She's incredible. And so she was really excited about that. And then I got this email that was like, hey, we want to bring you in for this meeting with these showrunners of this thing. And it's like a huge, really, really good career opportunity for me because I'm like just trying to get into animation in LA. So you don't want to turn down anything, right? In the beginning, you're just like, if I can get in the room, you know?
Yeah.
So I like went to my therapist and I was like, what do? I can't make this choice. And she's like, you obviously take the job because she's here for a week. Why don't you just go to Disneyland?
Make it your own gay day. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was the thing. And I was like, but it won't be gay. And she's like, but you will be there. So it will be. I was like, fair point. Disney's always at least a little bit gay anyway. So it's fine. So that was hilarious because I just was so overwhelmed by what anyone else would look at and go, this is the obvious solution. But I was like, no, but I planned this. And then the plan changed.
Yeah.
And I cannot handle it. So
yeah. And it is this, it's taken me a long time. And there's so much of that still, as we were saying, where there's still so much that's out of my hands.
Yeah.
Particularly if you're doing a show that, you know, that has a really tight schedule, but also no money and they have to switch things around all the time and just sort of like be reactive instead of proactive. And it's unsettling to sort of be told like, no, you belong to us. So this is changing as of right now. Mm-hmm. And and I wonder if that's an only child thing too. Cause there's something about it that feels very dangerous, even though it is in no way dangerous on any level. But it still feels like, I don't know if I should let you take this from me. Like, I don't know if I should let you tell me what I'm supposed to be doing instead of looking at it, like feeling like, well, they're making me not go to gay day. That can't be good. I don't know if I want to work for those people.
but that's so absurd because it's like, no, this is such an amazing opportunity. Yeah,
instead of seeing it as like, oh my God, this door opened and this other thing is going to
change. Like you will never see me like more stressed out than when, cause I also hate being late for things like movies or comic conventions. Like, you will never see me more stressed out or like lash out more than if like we're on our way to a movie. I know we have exactly enough time to get there and like get snacks and get a decent seat. And then there's like traffic or someone will be like, why don't we go do this other thing first? And just something in me snaps. I'm like, no, we are not going to do, we have to. And I will just freak out. And I'm working on that.
Yeah.
But it is definitely something like we went to this convention this past weekend and I was staying with some friends and we were driving to the convention hotel, which was a Marriott. And my friend put it in her GPS and we got there and we were already kind of running late. And I have like a pretty complicated table setup and we drove to the wrong Marriott. And so I knew we were going to be late and I just like snapped and I had to like reel myself back in right away because it's the most unimportant thing. Like, who cares if you're 10 minutes late?
And you see, and what's frustrating is like you see the results of it not mattering within 2 hours of the freak out.
Yeah, of course.
And it's like, how can I fast forward to be in that place and just skip this mess of my brain?
And just so insane because all the people in that I was with in the car were just like, whoa, like, we're gonna be fine. Yeah. I was like, no, you don't understand. I have this finite time schedule in my head, and we can't fix that. And that is, I mean, because I've had to schedule everything so rigidly to get everything done and to get everything done. Like now, when stuff messes with that, I'm just like, oh, okay, it's cool. It's not the end of the world, Kate. It's not the end of the world.
I think that's huge, and that's just, I mean, there we go back to the concept of time again, which is that there are just things that we have to put in the hours to become comfortable with.
Yeah.
And that's something that, you know, all older people tell younger people, and it's a total blind non-concept when you're younger. There just isn't a way. It's all experiential. It's like you can't even begin to understand that you need the time and experience to have the time and experience they're telling you need. It's this weird cycle where only after you've learned that and would tell it to someone else, does it become useless for you to tell them? It's like, if only I could just, because I remember when I was also felt like, don't tell me it's going to take time because I don't have time. But now I get that. But now you can't hear me say that. Got it. There's a chasm separating the version of me that's back there, that's someone else now, and the person who told me, like, Janet, just going to get easier. You just will. There's just an accumulation of experience where, like with flying, you're just doing it so much that it loses its power to mm-hmm. be super anxiety inducing or super this or super that, that there's something about it that the older you get, the more time you've lived on the earth, the more those things kind of collapse into, oh, well, now I am going to skip ahead to the part where it doesn't matter anymore. At least I hope so. I hope that becomes shorter. So you're kind of time traveling to, oh, well, in an hour from now, I'm going to be like rueful and apologetic to the person I'm with because mm-hmm. I'll be in a fine mood again. Yeah. And they will look at me like, what happened to the monster that was there 1 hour ago about setting up your yes. table? Hopefully the monster will sort of like start to come up and you go, I don't have time for you. Like in a second, this is not going to be an issue. You know,
that's the dream, right?
That's the dream.
And I actually find it a lot easier when I'm sort of caretaking for somebody else. And by which I mean, like, I'm a better traveler when I travel with someone less experienced.
100%.
Because you take on that sort of role of, I know what to do. Because I do. I mean, I know everything to do in airports.
Absolutely.
I've traveled through the Canadian-US border so many times. I know how to get through that stuff.
Yeah.
I know, you know, I know what to pack. I know how to, where to go. I know all the things. And, but when I travel alone, you know, something that goes wrong will completely unhinge me. But if I travel with someone else and something goes wrong, I'm like, no, this is fine. I got this.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah,
I think it's absolutely true.
And
I mean, that's a cousin, right, of why people in crisis who are going to programs and stuff are told to be of service, because there is something so wonderful about being in a space where you're a person who has experience or wisdom and can bring that to the table rather yeah. than having to just manage your own life, because there's so much room in our minds for things to kind of crinkle and crumple. But if you have somebody else you're accountable to who needs you, then that space kind of gets pushed aside because you're, you know, doing things in consideration of someone else and with the ability to go, oh, wait, me seeing you freak out reminds me that I do that, but yeah. actually, let me be the one in this situation to say it's no big deal.
Anxious people makes you less anxious, or it makes me less anxious. Like, I mean, I, you know, get those sort of depressive mood swings that so many people do, where you'll be like, oh, I'm worthless. Like, everything I do is terrible, and you can't pull yourself out of it. But when you see someone else do it, you're so good.
Oh my God. I love it. When friends call me when I'm in a bad space. I love when they call me with their problems because it fully pulls me out.
I can fix this. I have something that I have control over and I can make this better because I know the things to say.
Yeah.
And it is hard because, like, I mean, I love traveling with my boyfriend because he is a less experienced traveler than I am. So I feel like I've got it when it comes to, like, the seats and the planes and the baggage and going through all that stuff. And, like, I got that. But then he is so much more chill about everything. You know, he's just an even keel in so many ways. And he will, like, take care of things for me when I forget to eat at my table, which I always do. Always. I will sit down at 10 in the morning. The show goes to 7. And at 6, I'll be like, why do I feel like I'm dying on the inside? Like, I haven't had any water. All I've had is coffee since this morning. And so he will do things like that and take care of you. But he's not super experienced at dealing with anxiety because he just doesn't have it. And, you know, like, man, I'm jealous of that. But being around people who are, I think, is so useful. And I like that I have friends who are, that I can come to and go, like, hey, I'm in my downward spiral.
Remember this version of me?
Remember this version of me that hates everything?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not, I've never done anything of value. And they're like, no, you're good. You're good.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting. I kind of like that. I mean, I travel with my friend Brittany a lot too, and she doesn't really get that same kind of anxiety. She's also like, I've sort of surrounded myself with people who are pretty chill and can, like, calm me, which is really nice. I think that's really useful. But again, like, she also doesn't travel as much. So I'm like, I got this.
But that's it. That's that copacetic thing. And I think that's where, you know, we sort of are reminded that we're such social creatures, is, and why people seek out one-on-one monogamous relationships or seek out relationships with more than one person that feels like it creates some sort of balance in your own life. And this person brings this to me and this person brings this to me. And maybe we'll see more of that as time goes on and there's less kind of sort of societal constructs around relationships. But that feeling of, this person's got me on this and then I've got them on that. Like, that's a really powerful feeling. And that's very human, right? I think, is to have that sort of, I need someone to catch me when I fall, but I would never want to have a relationship with someone where it's all one-sided and that's what happens. Yeah. I have to be able to have an exchange where that person can absolutely depend on me as well, you know?
I couldn't imagine at this point in my life. I mean, I'm also, like, really happy with my boyfriend, who's great. But I couldn't imagine again, being in a relationship with someone who is like as neurotic and high, what's the, like high demand as I am, high maintenance, I guess. I mean, when you're in relationships with people like that, it's always like really intense. And some parts of that can be really incredible, but the lows of that are just horrible. So I really love, you know, being with someone who's, you know, sweet. It's not like in any capacity he's like boring. He's super funny.
No, but if he has the ability to kind of see through to the other side, I think sometimes that's what the consistency is with people who can provide that in a relationship, is not that they aren't feeling things, but they somehow have a closer connection to like the idea of things kind of staying okay.
Yeah.
And that they can be at that place and then you're sort of doing a little more of a jagged thing.
Yeah.
But if they're not being taken on for that ride, that has nothing to do with anything other than wherever their brainwaves are. They're just like, oh, I have this like overall experience of who Kate is, and it includes that, and it also includes this, and it also includes this, and includes that, and I know that that's what I signed up for. Mm-hmm. And that's not about anything other than I've chosen to love all the way through all of those different versions because it's worth it and it's interesting and exciting and fun and powerful, and that and he probably doesn't need to be with someone where they're both just kind of like, anyway, you know, like it's this, you know, I think I there's you guys are both getting something very important out of it.
Yeah, I think it is a really, really good balance. And, you know, you have to go through so many of the terrible balances to get to like the really good one. And it was totally worth moving to America for.
Oh, that's
I mean,
great.
Like, you know, politically depending, but
oh, boy. Yeah.
I don't even want to like think about it. Do I have to move back to Canada in 2 months? Who knows? But
I'm coming.
But no, it's been really great. And I do honestly like feel so much more even than I kind of ever have in my life. And I've always been, you know, high or low and in a very, and creative people are like that sometimes, you know,
but how cool to have, to realize that you can go to therapy, have a good relationship and still make art.
Yeah. And that was the thing, you know, when I first went, one of my number one stipulations was that I don't want to be medicated, in any kind of major way. Right. You know, my mom was in a lot of different ways in my life, and I've kind of seen how it can affect people positively and negatively. And also from being on Ritalin, like I'm so afraid of my temperament, of my like creative ability being affected by medication and changing who I am, because I feel like I'm really at a point where like I know
that's why it's such a tricky subject and why people have to kind of find out what works for them, because it's true. It's like one medication can make someone feel like they're not themselves, and that same medication can make someone else feel like they're able to be themselves.
Yeah.
And there's no right or wrong answer necessarily.
No,
it's
absolutely.
So, but it's like there's so many variables.
I know, and it works really, really well for some people. And I've come around, you know, after, because I've been seeing her for so many months, I've come around to like, yeah, I totally get it, and I know that that's like completely necessary for some people, and I think it's incredible. But I definitely love that, you know, she's sort of been willing to work with me on like cognitive behavioral therapy.
Absolutely.
Instead of, because I know some, that was my fear, you know, where somebody goes to a therapist and right away they're like, oh, we're gonna put you
I can
on
see
this.
What you need to be
yeah,
on yeah
yeah and I was just like no thank you please
yeah
and that's been really, really helpful, because she like gives me homework and tasks, and I'm great at tasks.
Yeah,
I love having assignments
you know,
that I can do, because that feels, the results from that feel very tangible, and you can actually see it working rather than, you know, something that's a little more wishy-washy. I like that.
I think that's great.
That really works for me, and that's been just enormously helpful. And it's nice that I've finally gotten back to a place where I feel like I can make, you know, personal art again, which I didn't for a long time because I felt like my emotions were just like way, way, way too intense to do that, and it's been awesome. So I'm really glad.
I'm so glad. I think there's a lot of really inspiring stuff in here, you guys. I hope that you feel the same way. I want to get into this MASH game.
Okay.
So the first one I'm going to do, just because we've kind of talked about our own tendencies or you know, certain skills, or feeling like we could use other kind of tools in our daily lives. Let's do one of my faves, which is you wake up tomorrow and kind of Matrix style, you've downloaded three new skills, and not necessarily like superhero skills, but definitely like I can manage this better, or I suddenly know how to speak X language or all languages or whatever. Three things that would be exciting too, that normally someone would be like, oh, you have to put in your 10,000 hours, or tomorrow you can go, actually.
Okay. Okay. I feel like this is, I'm going to think this is easy, but then as soon as I start doing it, I'm going to be like, well, I would love to be really great at, I would say piano as a specific instrument, but like being able to compose music in some way.
Sure.
Because I love writing lyrics to things, but I have no like musical knowledge.
Oh, this is great. This is exactly what this category is
for. So that...
So music composition is music what composition, I put in.
Being able to like write little ditties and songs to go with stuff, because especially as I'm sort of getting into animation now, like the ability to write songs for shows is something I actively want to learn, and I think it's one of my goals for the next year is to like get a keyboard and at least basically figure it out. But music passed me by growing up. I was just never, I never did it. So okay, so there's that. I would, yeah, the language thing is great because I'm basic in French, but I would love to be competently fluent.
Great,
because one of my best friends is French, and I wish, like, I can read it if I take my time.
Yeah.
And I can hear it if people speak slowly and it's not too complicated.
Yeah.
Because you learn it in Canada. I mean, growing up, you have to take French, but a lot of it's left me. What else? Oh my gosh. Some of it is artistic. But I'm thinking some of it's like increases of skills I already have. Cause I don't want to say like draw, cause I can draw. God, I don't know. Oh, I wish I knew how to do special effects makeup.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Because that was something I also almost studied, but you can't learn it in like Nova Scotia, Canada. You move.
Right.
And it's very expensive.
Right.
So, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay, great. Let's do three vacation homes, a place that we'll just pretend it's like easy for you to get to. So it's not about the sort of TSA of it all. Mm-hmm. But these are three non-existent places in the way that we know them. So this could be like Narnia. It could be Tatooine. It could be anything, or can be someplace here, but that is impractical, like underwater or on the moon.
Right. Okay. The Shire.
Great.
Number one, no question.
Great.
Oh gosh, I have so many like fictional worlds.
And let me say this, I'm gonna give you also that you can go, this will be the next category, you can go live inside a movie where you're not a character. It's not that you're living out the plot, but that you're able to just engage with those characters and live and move around and be free and safe. So I can put the Shire in here, or I can sort of put Lord of the Rings world in.
No, like
in.
The Shire specifically.
Yeah, okay, great.
Wait, Rivendell's cool too, but the Shire is more my vibe.
So just FYI, know that if you, like, for example, if you were to say like, Hogwarts, I would be like, well, know that you also have the option of saving that and doing Harry Potter
as
a movie.
Yeah, that's my other one.
Okay.
And like just the Harry Potter universe.
I'm going to put that in. Do you want me to put that in as a movie you can jump into?
Yes, I would say like Harry Potter, like pre-war.
Yeah, great. Before everything got real fucked up.
Before everyone died.
Yeah.
When Sirius was still alive. So like the early part of book three, I'm very specific about my Harry Potter.
Right. No. I've totally understand.
Someone tweeted it this morning and I'm trying to convince my boyfriend that we should go as Remus and Sirius for Halloween.
Sure, absolutely.
I really want to.
Absolutely, you should.
I'm trying to think of other fictional.
So yeah, if you want to flip back and forth, like if you want to sort of do that with movies, if you think of something that's that's a whole kind of movie with the characters and stuff, you can put it in that category, or you can have it be
like Halloween Town. In Nightmare Before Christmas?
Yes.
Probably. I guess that's movie category.
I'm going to put that over there. And also, if like we get to the end, I'm really making up a lot of rules as I go. I guess that's the nature of this game. Also, if for some reason you're like, listen, I would love to choose a fictional place, but can one of them also just be New Zealand? Then I also am like, well, yeah, I'm not going to tell you. You can't have a real.
Yeah, because that's why I said the Shire, because originally I was going to say New Zealand, and I was like, oh, well, then this is just the fictional version.
Well, let me just do
New Zealand
as the other one. You really stand an excellent chance at this point of being in a very green New Zealand / Shire-like area.
Yeah, that's kind of my dream place.
Yeah.
Anywhere that's, I don't know, I'm not, my dream places are never like super metropolitan areas. Okay, in the third movie, I guess, and I'm probably going to have a very similar one for location, Practical Magic.
Oh,
I specifically want to live in that house.
Oh my God,
Practical
Magic. That movie so much.
It is like my favorite movie ever.
I really love it.
It's so good.
I think that it's... it's one of those that, like, for some reason, it's not particularly cool to say that you love. You know what I mean? It's not like saying you love the Royal Tenenbaums. It's such a fun movie.
Well, my favorite movies are, like, Practical Magic, Josie and the Pussycats, and Legally Blonde.
Great.
None of which are, like, Criterion.
Right, right.
But as I get older and as I watch and rewatch them, I realize that they're just, like, some of the best actual, like, sisterhood movies, you know? Legally Blonde, surprisingly feminist when you come back to
absolutely
it. So it's literally all about a girl turning down a shitty dude to, like, pursue her career and find herself,
and who also was like, oh, I'm not gonna do it the way everyone else does, and I'm still gonna kick ass.
That movie was, I mean, my guiding light when I was working on my visa. That was, like, my, you know, her big, like,
great.
Her big move, and the musical also, which is incredible.
So that just leaves us with one non-movie place. Potentially, or real life place, if you want to go down the road.
I'm sure I'll think of this later and be like, oh, the obvious thing.
That is 100% what will happen.
What you'll do, right? When you're put on the spot, you can't really think of it. A fictional
You have to
place.
Go back to your improv roots, my dear.
You'd think it would be easier, wouldn't you? I'm just, like, mentally going through my bookshelves, you know, what do I like for fictional places? Because I'm not that into Narnia. It just
Me neither.
I don't know what's a fictional, like, version. I gotta pick a specific one.
Could also be like out of a comic, or, you know what I mean, it doesn't have to be.
Can I just say, like, the Ghibli universe in general?
Yes, like, absolutely. Movies.
Just, like, everything. Howl's Moving Castle, Kiki's absolutely. Delivery Suite. It's just, like, the sweet softness.
100% understand. Yeah. Okay, that's great.
All my beautiful places are, like, anti-anxiety places, you can tell. I'm like, something calm and green with, like, really nice cakes.
Right there. Right there with you. Okay, so this is the next, this is a classic MASH category question, which is alternate universe, sexy times, or love, or wife, or husband. You can think long-term, you can think short-term.
Yeah.
Three, and, I mean, it can be, like, you know, famous people, but it could also be, like, fictitious characters. It could be just a character that one famous person played in a movie, or anything like that.
Okay. Number one is Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Wonderful.
My fantasy husband.
Wonderful.
Scully specifically.
Great.
Not just Gillian Anderson, but Scully.
Great, great, great.
There's so many. I have a crush on everyone. I'm just like, who have I thought about in the last 24 hours? It's bad. There's some that I'm not going to say because I'm friends with them.
Fair, fair.
Who's number three? I'll just go with Sirius Black.
Great.
Sure.
Great, 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 great. I think that's a wonderful, wonderful choice. Okay. Next category, three foods that in this life that we live in right now are probably not great to have all the time, or are just impossible to have all the time because it's one specific thing that you can't just have whenever you want it.
Yes.
So it could be as specific as, like, this very specific cookie that you used to get at blah, 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 or it could just be cookies. Three.
Dragon rolls for sushi.
Great.
The, like, super fancy ones they make that really look like dragons.
Mm-hmm. Oh, those. Yes.
Yeah, there's a place in downtown Burbank that does that I, it's like my special treat.
I'm going to have to get that name offline so we don't reveal
great.
The secret.
They're really good. What else? What are, like, my favorite things in the world to eat?
That you're like, God, I wish I could just eat that all day, but I can't because it would make me sick.
I know, because it would kill you.
Right.
I'm trying to think of what that is. Like, this is really boring, but my favorite food in the world is Cobb salads. I know it's really boring.
It's a great combo.
But it's like a superfood.
That's a great, delicious combo.
It's like everything you like in one food.
So it's got salty, crunchy, but it's not fatty. Really, it's not.
Yeah, it's not really bad for you. You could probably literally eat that all day and you would be fine.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it depends on how much bacon and blue cheese we're talking about.
See, I don't eat the blue cheese, though. Yeah. So it's just the bacon. So if you went easy on that.
But
that,
you know what? I embrace this. Your Cobb salad. I think it's great.
I love Cobb
salad. The perfect Cobb salad.
It's
also, because sometimes you can get a Cobb salad that you're like, guys, come on. You could have stepped this up a tiny bit.
Yeah, that's true.
It's usually a safe order, though.
Yeah. So I'm going to pick something that's, like, super unhealthy for the last one so that it makes sense. Marble cake.
Great.
You know, the cake that's, like, half vanilla, half chocolate?
Yeah.
That's my jam.
I think it's great. You've managed to smush two cakes into one category.
Well, yeah, that's... I was going to do, like, ice cream cake, so it was all the things at once.
Oh,
but I don't actually really
too.
Like ice cream cake. No. I like my ice cream and my cake separate.
Good for you. I do, too.
Yeah.
I like the first bite, and then I'm like, oh, wait. This is turning into a sog
well, I'm
fest.
I'm kind of lactose intolerant, so I can't eat, like, a lot of either one. Yeah. Super into mint ice cream, but I want, I go and I'm like, can I have like the half kid's cup? Can I have like the toddler amount, please? Yeah. A tablespoon would be great.
Can you just take a spoon and fling it at me and whatever lands in my mouth,
then
that's what I'll eat.
That. I will eat that for sure.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Okay. Next, we're going to do like a sort of best friend, fictitious or real, living or dead, historical, whatever you want. This is sort of a person that you can call for advice, you know, who's always excited to take your call.
Oh my God.
And it's not just a mentorship. It's like that person still, you know, gets lots out of you. It's not like, hi, sorry to call again.
Well, then Elle Woods from Legally Blonde. I feel like she would be an awesome best friend.
Right.
Galadriel.
Right.
Who, you know, if like you were on friendship status, she'd sort of let that queen thing down.
Oh, absolutely.
Every once in a while. And like,
absolutely. And you would feel like, yeah, I'm in, like, I'm in this tiny little world.
Dish
yeah.
with Galadriel. That'd be great. She'd be an awesome best friend.
Love it.
Oh, I'm trying to think of like comics and stuff like that too, but it's always movies that come to mind because they're, you know, visually it gets to you.
Oh, faster. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Who would be a really good best friend? Oh, wow. Those two were so easy and just came to me like nothing. Oh, these are, I guess it's because we've all been talking about the same things. Like Valerie from the Josie and the Pussycats movie, I feel like would be an amazing best friend. That's Rosario Dawson's character.
Great.
So just Valerie.
Because I almost think that Rosario Dawson would just be awesome.
Yeah. No, she would be an amazing best friend.
No,
she's
I love that. Cool. Obviously, we know a little more about her character than we do know about her as a person. Yeah. okay, this, I'm going to do this one. This is a new MASH that I think one of my listeners, I think Marcelo maybe sent this to me, or maybe it was Christian. Sorry, guys. I made a list that was very careful, and now I see that I can't tell who said who what. But this is a tough one because sometimes for me, time travel stuff is tricky because I get real in my head about not wanting to change anything. Mm-hmm. But let's do this one. This is you travel back in time to visit your teenage self. You are unable to forcibly change moments that occurred or will occur. Like, you know, you're going to steal candy from the store and get punished, but you're unable to prevent that from happening. Mm-hmm. But what's a piece of advice that you would give yourself?
Oh my God.
So you're not changing anything, but you're sort of taking the context of what you were doing and going, hey kid, listen, let me just tell you this. It's funny because of course it goes back to like that thing we were talking about where it's hard because would that teenage version, you know, take that advice?
Oh my God. I'm trying to think of ones that are not like too personally revealing.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
It's like, don't date X person. What would I say? It's hard because like for a long time I thought I would tell myself not to drop out of college, but I wouldn't have the career I had if I didn't drop out of college. So
maybe your advice is like, don't, it's okay that you're doing this. It's gonna lead somewhere, you know?
I might say like go to therapy younger.
Yeah,
that's great. Probably one of them.
Great. Also, I think it's totally fair for you to say, don't bother with this person. Just don't tell me that who that person's name is.
No. It's okay. It's okay. I would say be more forgiving of your mom.
Great.
And, start saving money.
Great. Yep.
Younger.
Yep. These are all very good.
Yes.
Great, great, great.
I did not start doing that until I was like, 4 years ago.
Yeah. Great, great, great. okay, here's the last one that I'm going to make up on the spot based on stuff we've talked about. And you might be like, this is the worst idea ever. But what would be, I'm thinking of like three musicals that whose worlds and futures beyond that musical get expanded into like graphic novels.
Whoa.
So like, oh, I get to see Elle Woods in graphic novel form in this whole other adventure that she has, or, you know.
Right. Well, I mean, Hamilton.
Great.
Although like after it, I would love to do the book where Hamilton and Burr are ghosts.
Great, 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 great.
Like haunting an inn in like the 1800s.
A lot of people are going to listen to this and go, please do that immediately, Kate. We need more.
And they're still like working out their shit like long after it. Like they become like this grumpy old couple
that are
like haunting a tavern in Maryland.
This is wonderful.
That's my dream. The Heathers musical
is great.
Incredible. And I would love to work on anything in that universe.
Love it.
One of the best ones. And oh my God. I mean, see, I'm tempted towards Legally Blonde just because I like that musical, but I would probably go for Wicked.
Absolutely.
That
it lends itself beautifully
the later books are not that great.
There you go.
They're not that
Let's fix that. Let's fix that via MASH. Okay. Now, the final piece of MASH, of course, is just that I need to tell you to tell me when to stop.
Okay. Stop.
Okay. Pause this. I'm going to do a little bit of non-math. Come back with your 100% guaranteed MASH future.
Perfect.
Yeah. Special shout out to Sailor Moon and Buffy.
Yeah. The two things that I forgot to mention, like the universes that I'm literally wearing a Sailor Moon t-shirt right now.
I know. And I couldn't see it or I probably would have been like, oh, wait.
Well, it's not really officially Sailor Moon. It's Sailor Moon wearing like a PVC bathing suit who has just robbed a bank.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. Really into it.
I love it. Mm-hmm. Okay. So first of all, I want to congratulate you on the nonstop dragon rolls that look like actual dragons that are at your disposal.
Also something I feel like you could eat forever and maybe not die.
Oh, great. No, they're great. And you get the power of a dragon every time.
I know I'm getting older because I was like, what's the healthiest food you could eat the most and still feel okay? I don't even want to fantasize a world about in which I like eat brownies for every meal. Ugh.
Okay, so unlimited dragon rolls.
Nice.
I have to assume that part of the reason because sushi is not cheap that you're able to afford them is that you started saving very young.
Yes.
Very good. Young when future you just told, you know, planted that seed for younger you. Mm-hmm. You also, that probably is also why you have a beautiful house in New Zealand.
Oh, lovely.
And when you are like, you know what, LA and New Zealand, guys, I just need something a little different. I want you to know you can jump in to the practical magic world.
Yes. Oh, my beautiful house on an island in Massachusetts.
I'm very excited.
Which is like where I actually
that.
Hope to end up and die.
Well, and
like,
there you go.
In basic, I want to live in like the town from Casper and Practical Magic.
Yeah, there you
go. I assume they're all the same small New England
all
town.
All the same small New England town where people are really good at making pies and they mm-hmm. pick berries and just leave them out on their driveway for people to take because they have more than they need.
And absolutely, there are witches.
And absolutely, 100% there are witches. I have to tell you about the new show that I'm on, which is...
Yes.
It takes place in a small New England town and involves witches.
Oh my God.
Maybe not the way you want it to. So you also have the fantastic ability to compose music.
Oh, wonderful.
That could be, I feel that's imminent in real life as well. Yeah. That actually is going to come in handy because you're working on, there's going to be a musical component, as everyone will insist, to this Hamilton Ghosts further exploration post-musical.
Oh,
so thank you on behalf of everyone. Thank you for providing that. And that this is all something that you share with both your dear friend Elle Woods.
Yes.
So you still got some Legally Blonde in there, which is wonderful.
She ends up in Massachusetts, so like,
there you
it
go.
Makes sense that
there
we
you go.
See each other.
And then the another person who's going to be quite at home in that world, Mr. Sirius Black.
Perfect.
So well
I think it would
done.
Be a conflict of interest if I were both married to Lin-Manuel
That's
Miranda
right.
and writing.
That's going to be too tough.
Musical.
You're
That's
gonna,
too
it's
awkward.
It's going to be too tough.
It's just awkward.
I mean, listen. Kate, this has been so fun. The people could not have been more right about you being the perfect guest for the podcast.
Oh,
thank you so much. I'm so glad I got you within your first LA year.
I know.
And
I'm
now
fresh.
I feel like we'll probably find out that we're at some cons together, although I don't have many more. I think I'm in Portland at the end of this
year. I'm
nice.
So excited.
Nice.
Yes.
And I'm going to New York Comic Con.
Cool.
So those are my two. But where would you like people to go? That's the most immediate, easy place to follow you to see everything you're up to and all that. Twitter?
I'm very simple. Everything is just Kate Leff.
Great.
It's katelef.com, at Kate Leff on Twitter, at Kate Leff on Instagram. The only
Great.
Place that's different is Tumblr, which is Kate or Die, but
okay.
I barely use it. So
right.
yeah.
Start on Twitter and then go from there, guys.
Yes,
that's what I
yeah,
say.
Everything links to itself, like a big Ouroboros chain.
That's right. That's right. Thank you so much. And guys, I'll talk to you next time on the podcast. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.